Okay, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot to do today. So let's get right down to business. The last Chabura, which was 2 weeks ago or so, 2.5 weeks ago, last Chabura, we laid the groundwork for Hilchus Tzedakah through beginning to look at Siman Resh Mem Tes Sif Aleph. We began last time talking about how much you give, and we saw that's one of the many questions where you see one of the underlying chakiras that recurs in so many different facets of Hilchot Tzedakah, and it's just sent in different guises, which is a question whether you're looking supply side, demand side. You're looking mitzad the nosein or mitzad the mekabel. That's going to have larger enough communities as we continue as well. But for now, in a simple sense, so we saw last time, that to ask how much you give, so there are different ways to look at that. So the ideal shear is mitzad the ani. The ideal shear, that's really, that comes up both Reish Mem Tes Sif Aleph and then more extensively in greater detail in Reish Nun. Ideally, if you could give day machzoro, if you could give, fill the fellow's need, the language of the Pesukim Chumash Devarim, so that's the ideal. If I'm not in a position to give day machzoro, so then I'm going to give a chelek of it. But both the question of what does it mean that I can give, and the question of if I can't, then how much do I give? Both those really filter through thinking about how much in total is a Jew supposed to be setting aside for tzedakah, and how much of that do I give to any particular onion? Those really are the two major shots we're going to be dealing with. Focus for now, the Seder Kedimus, the second question of how you allocate, so that's going to be largely Siman Reish and Aleph. Return to Chinyan Reish Mem Tes to figuring out how much am I supposed to give, and later Reish Mem Tes, how you go about the process of how one goes about conveying the tzedakah funds to the ani. So last time we spent some time on the big picture items of how much a Jew is supposed to give, and so there's a range of shiurim. The very, very minimal shiur, shlishus hashekel b'shana. But then, if I can afford it, that's the bare minimum. It's the way Shulchan Aruch presents for the Rambam, is Ayin Beunis is Maser, and Ayin Yafe is Chomesh. The standard should be a tenth. And ideally, if one is in a position to extend more, so Matav Manam to give 20%. The 20% is a Gemara Ksubis, as Takanos Usha, not to give more than 20%. We saw last time there are several exceptions that takana susha. If someone's unusually wealthy, or b'shas moso, because the concern is shema yi ani v'yitzara fabriyas. They don't want people to overextend themselves more than 20%, then there is the increased risk of making themselves financially precarious and ending up needing to receive tzedakah, rachman fund, instead of offering to give tzedakah. So that perhaps is not a concern. One is Ashir Muflag, and is presumably not a concern B'Shas Moso. We need to take care of one's children, but one's children are taken care of, so that's not a concern. And again, we discussed last time details of even B'Shas Moso, there may be a limit to how much you give to Tzedakah, because one also wants to fulfill the mitzvah of Yerusha, not to be Ma'avir Nachla. But the primary discussion really centers around this question of Master Ksafim, which is ironically hardest, although the Rambam presents, Rambam Shulchan Aruch presents that's the Midah Beinis, that's the Ayin Beinis, it's the one that we spent last time thinking about is where does it come from. Ironically, of all those Shiurim, Chomesh, Shlishus HaShekel, and Maser is the only one that isn't really rooted in the Bavli. There's a Tosis in Tanis who quotes Midrashei Halacha, and that breeds that gives rise to a major discussion in the post-Kim in Shinla, and very very end of Shinla Amud Aleph, and Pesachei Tshuva quotes some of this as well here in Reish Mem Tes. Is Daraisa is a drabanan or is it neither? The Maril says it's drabanan. The Maram Rutenberg is quoted by many as saying that it's not Daraisa, it's not drabanan. It's an old minig Yisrael. And it does get close to the post-Kim we're talking about now in terms of the details of how one sets aside Ma'aser Kesafim, whether it's Daraisa, Drabanan, or Minug, and we tend to assume that it's Minug, it's not really, even though the Sifrei, the Midrash Halacha, the Tosas quotes in Tanis, makes it sound like we're learning it from Maser, Maser Ani. We understand either that's Asmachta, or perhaps not even Asmachta to the Rabbanan, or Asmachta to Minig Yisrael. But the question is, L'masa, how does one go about doing this? The concept is there, and certainly if one can afford it, one should. Since we assume it's a minhag, postmen do take some leniencies, as we'll see. And since it's a minhag, one should begin to say, B'neder, during one of the first times he set aside Ma'aser Kesafim, so that it's not doesn't become a neder. The question is, so how do you go about doing it? A number of issues come up. We left off last time just with a list of questions, so let's dive in. One of the details that Shulchan Aruch addresses directly, one of the details that the Ramah addresses, which we're going to hold off for later, is that what Ma'aser Kesafim is used for is specifically tzedakah, aniyim, and not just generally doing mitzvahs. That's we'll get to later on, not today, when we start talking about how one allocates the funds. Shulchan Aruch already talks about chomesh, and it should be true for Maser as well, that it's from the revach. If someone gives you capital to just start a business, then perhaps you would take the chomesh, or maybe even Maser, from the keren, but from that point on, it's going to be from the revach, from the income. You're investing money, and you're pulling out dividends, and you're buying, you're selling, you're coming out, not total revenue, but you're coming out with a profit, so you have to give maser on your profits. Maser on your profits. You're making money, so you have to give maser. Post can point out that if you made earned money, or if you got a gift of money, so we could talk about maser on that. If you got a gift of goods, someone gives you an item, someone gives you artwork, someone gives you a car, so it's not something you could take a tenth of. Clearly not could take a tenth of the car. And what does that mean? Someone gave me a car, so I should figure out how much the car is worth and give away a tenth of the stock. I don't have that cash. That cash isn't liquid. So post can assume. Several posts in both recent and more ancient talk about point out that that's something that does not require miser. All the more so if I have if I already own an asset and it appreciates in value. I own a house. Let's say a fellow buys a house and then the values of homes rise. So if I'm in the business of flipping homes, and I buy a home at a certain price, and I hold it until it rises and sell it. Maybe I invest in it, and then I sell it, and I make a profit. The difference between what I bought and what I bought it at, what I sold it at, that when I sell it, then I'm gaining a profit. That's my business. I sell it. I take a profit. I get liquid cash for that difference. That's when I can talk about giving maser. But if I have a home that's not an investment item, it's a residential home. I'm living in the house. So it's love, Baruch Hashem, the value of the house went up, but that's not something I would give maser on.
What if you're renting out the house? So just send something one shy, renting it monthly.
If I rent the house, so then the rental income.
So it's not someone who flips houses, so I bought a house and then I'm renting it out.
Right.
So what I would have to give maser on.
Well, the one who bought it is renting until he's ready to sell it.
Yes, exactly.
So he has two income streams. There's he's being marviach because while he's holding his gain rentals, and when he sells it, a profit, so he gets revach then as well. So those are both. Kozma, every month he takes in a rental check, so that's something he's giving maaser on. And then when he sells it, minus what he bought it for, which we'll get back to in a moment, so he bought the house for $450. He sells the house for $600.
What if he never sold it?
So then, until he sells it,
so then would he have to give maaser off the rent because the rent doesn't add up to how much?
They're two separate things. He bought a house. He owns a house now, and now he's using the house to He's using the house to.
He still has a loss. So if he bought the house for $430,000 and he's renting it,
Okay. So hold on to that. So now you're raising the question of. What you're saying is, I bought the house for $450, right? And I'm renting it out. Now, I bought the house for $450. In most cases, doesn't mean I paid up front $450. It means I took out a loan, and I'm month by month paying off the loan. I'm making mortgage payments. I'm paying the bank for the house while the renter, the tenant, is paying me for the house, hopefully more than I'm paying in mortgage. So it's, the post can point out, it's that difference that you have to give maaser. This is a critical, the major discussion, this is one way of coming into the conversation, is a major discussion maaser k'safin is, what do you deduct? In other words, you're not just looking at a very simple situation. We'll come back to the mortgage home that I'm renting, the rental property, in a moment. Let's just say I bought a house for $450 and I sell it for $600. So when I sell it for $600, they hand me a check, Nanyaf, the bank, whoever, hands me a check, $600,000. Do I give $60,000 for Maser? No. What do I give? Not 60, but 15. I'm only giving Maser, I'm not giving Maser, no, I just got revenue, someone just handed me $600,000. But it's not $600,000 profit, that's $600,000 revenue. But I had expenses of $450. I pay out $450, I held the house, and now I get $600. So my profit is just revenue minus expenses. Or I'm a shopkeeper, and I buy inventory, and then I sell it at a profit. So I'm not giving Maestro my full revenue, all the money in the cash register. I'm only giving Maestro on whatever's in the cash register minus what I spent to get it. That is the predominant view in Poskim. It's quoted in a number of different places. There's the Tshuva Chavas Yar that's referenced in the Pesachei Tshuva, this long, long Pesachei Tshuva, Sifkat and Aleph, Yer Reish Mem Tes, near the beginning. It's ironic, there's so many issues that he quotes here at relative length, and this one he just gives you 1, 2, 3, Maram Komos. He quotes the Tshuvas Chavas, five lines in, Tshuvas Chavas Yoyer, in the Hashmatos. Tshuvas Chavas Yoyer, Masha Katsav, B'Shem Chavas Yoyer, Nosei L'Shuk, Gam Hotza B'Chal Karen Yechashev, if you're traveling to markets, I'm buying and selling. I need to get to the yerid. I need to get to the fair in order to sell my wares, or in order to buy. Then I'm going to buy wholesale, and then I'm going to travel back home and we'll sell locally retail. Chavis Nair says, whatever your travel expenses are, that you deduct business expenses, you deduct before you cheshbon meiser. So number one, I'm buying rugs wholesale. I'm selling them retail. So number one, look at how much you take in. When you sell at retail, minus whatever you paid for them, and minus whatever other costs it took you to earn that money. So you had to travel to and from, you had travel expenses. Chavis Yoyer says that's all excluded. That's all deducted. In other words, the cost of making money, whatever the cost of making money might be, it can be many different things depending on what industry you're in. It may be buying tools. It may be gas and tolls. It may be buying a car. It may be a uniform, it may be clothing, it may be whatever it is you need, travel expenses, whatever you need, the cost of making money, post can point out taxes. The Berakei Yosef on the bottom of the page of Shulchan Aruch points out that taxes come off the top, in the first very wide line at the bottom. Ein mechuyav lahafer shmeiser ela acher sheyitol shir hamas. Berakei Yosef began shir hamas chol o sha'ar dvar mitzvah, the very bottom of the page of Shulchan Aruch. That's certainly income tax, which is a cost of making money. Because if I wouldn't have earned the money, I wouldn't be paying taxes on it. So I'm only paying maser on my post-tax earnings. So I take whatever I grossed and then knock off taxes, knock off whatever the expenses I incurred were in order to make this money, and then I give maser on whatever remains. Let's say in the scenario you were talking about before. Let's say I take out a mortgage to buy a... I already have a house in which I live. I take out a second mortgage to buy a second property. I'm not going to live there, but I'm planning to rent it. Maybe down the road I'll sell it. We'll see. But for now, I'm planning to hold it and rent it out. Maybe I'll do some shiputzim. So I'm getting revenue every month, whatever the rental check is, but I'm also every month paying the bank for the mortgage. So again, the way it works, it's a smart decision if I can rent it for more than I'm paying in mortgage, and more than whatever other expenses are. I may have repair costs. Certain repairs are on the balabais. If I had to do some renovations in advance in order to make it rentable. So all of those are business expenses. All those are costs of making money. So whatever the difference is between those, the rental check that I receive minus the mortgage check that I pay, minus the other expenses I pay out, that's my profit. Not the revenue, not the gross revenue, but the net profit. The revenue minus the expenses. Now the truth is that Pesachei Tshuva goes on to say, Ein b'sheilas yavetz, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin in his Tshuvas, pik b'zeh, he says, no, eino menake hotzah b'chal inyan. You can't deduct expenses. Now that's the rationale for not deducting expenses is, after all, by the quote-unquote original, this takes us back to the core issue, where does Maaser Kesafim come from? And to what extent do you see Maaser Kesafim is really an extension of Maaser Ani? Maaser Ani, there's no deducting. When you take Truma and Maaser, so I planted my field of peppers, and then the peppers grew. So I have thousands and thousands of peppers. I'm going to take 2% of the peppers, it'll be Truma Gedola. And let's just say 10% will be Maaser Rishon. In a Maaser Ani year, another 9%, 10% of what remains is Maaser Ani. You don't say, well, I have to spend a certain amount on, I have to pay for pepper seeds in order to get all these peppers. Or let's even make it straighter. Let's not talk about peppers. Let's talk about grain, where what you produce is more seed. Right? I planted my field of wheat, barley, what have you, and then harvest season comes, and I harvest X amount of wheat. But I have 1,000 bushels of wheat, but I needed a certain number of bushels of wheat to plant. So it wasn't pure profit. I invested, let's say, 5 bushels of wheat in the ground, and then I took out 100. So you don't say, oh, subtract the 5, and we want to look at 95 bushels of profit, and take tourists and maestros from the rest. No, you take tourists and maestros from everything. You're not manaka any expenses that you had, hiring workers, irrigation, fertilization, and you don't even deduct the amount of seeds that you originally put in the ground. So that, at first blush, look, maestros off them also. It's just whatever comes out of the ground, whatever comes out of total revenue, that I think my success. So, David Oppenheim, that Shuvas Chavis Yair, who you can look in Simon Reish Chav Dalin, Chavis Yair, Yair Batrach, and he has having a discussion with David Oppenheim, who was famous also. This was, we're leaving Adar Sheni. David Oppenheim is famously quoted by the Magen Avraham in Simon Nunhein Archayim, having the discussion about if you're born in Adar Rishon and your bar mitzvah year is also Shana Mubaris, do you have your bar mitzvah in Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni? Which seems like it should be obviously Adar Rishon, but then once you start thinking about it, perhaps your daf could be Adar Sheni. David Oppenheim is very involved in that child. That's one famous of David Oppenheim. You hear his name also here. Chavis Yair just quotes, it was having this shock of a tire with David Oppenheim about the business expenses. If David Oppenheim was even more, was even stronger than Chavis Yair, that you absolutely do deduct the cost of making money. Number one, it's not really Maaser Ani. We don't hold it to Daraisa. We probably don't even hold it to Drabana, like my real. We probably hold it like Mar Rutenberg, that it's a minha. Moreover, if it was really, really, really Maaser Ani, it would only be 2 out of every 7 years. Right? Moreover, he points, David Oppenheim points out, that the Gemara in the Darim Nun Tes Amud Beis says Dafka, that's a special Gzeiras HaKasav, a drasha to teach you that by Inyane Zeria you don't deduct what you put into the ground in order to get this Takana. You just look at everything that came out of the ground. That sounds like it would not carry over to my six offerings. It says, but then he says, so Taka, how does it work? Why is it that you do? Okay, so we're not going to ask Akasha from Maisrani, but what's the lumdus in saying that you do deduct expenses? It has a certain natural appeal. But then Abdav Apanim says, let me go a step further, and I should mention before I go weiter, there's a beautiful sefer, a mix of Hebrew and English, that quotes a lot of the Maror Makomos. On this, some of them you'll find on the page of Shulchan Aruch, and some of them are tshuvas that you won't otherwise find. That was put out, I don't know if it was published in 1980. I don't know if it was by Feldheim. I don't know if it's published again since. The title is merely Meiser Ksafim. Very straightforward. It was published by, I think, the only sefer ever published by the AOJS, the Association of Orthodox Jewish Scientists. I don't know if I mentioned last Chabura. They worked mostly, it was from scientists. Their focus was mostly, they published other published journals, they published collections of articles. I don't know if they ever published another halachic work of this sort. Most of their work is on Torah and science, but here it's really Torah and accounting. But they're looking at how Torah plays out in the modern world, and they start talking about how should they have a whole lengthy list of how all these things play out in modern business situations with modern accounting methods. And they sat down, they had a group of Tamei Chava working in the Shilas together with a group of accountants and a group of business people and they asked many, many Shilas, and they give you the back and forth with Gedolei HaPosim. They correspond extensively with Shlomo Zalman, they correspond extensively with Diane Weiss and with others. Very, very fascinating. So they quote whole chunks of this Tshuvas Chavis Yar. You can want to look it up. Tshuvas Chavis Yar published Seven Reish Chav Dalet, and he quotes Tshuvas Chavis Yar is written by Rav Yair Bachrach, and he's having the discussion with Rav David Oppenheim. David Oppenheim says no. He says the way we look at it, whether it's mitam minag or midrabanan, whatever, what have you. But again, Pashas is mitam minag, is that we consider Maaser Ksavim like a shutaf. Ki'ilu aniyim have a 10% stake in your business. So again, the thinking is perhaps more natural if you're running a business as opposed to being a salaried employee. The concept is certainly the same. They're like a 10% shutif in your business, which means, number one, they're going to share in the expenses of making money also. Reb David Oppenheim and much more recently the quote Diane Weiss point out, it also helps you to figure out what are reasonable expenses. What are considered reasonable business expenses? Which, by the way, the Havdil is a question that the IRS and tax lawyers spend plenty of time on as well. Because the Havdil in secular tax law, business expenses are also deductible. And how you define business expenses, even when people are acting in good faith, there could be a lot of naughty problems. Rachman, some people are not acting in good faith, people who try to game the system. But even people acting in good faith, why would one game the system in my successor? And nor should one, Chalila, game the system of taxation either. But even acting in good faith, there are often questions that gray areas that come up, is this legitimately a business expense or not? I have a home office, so on and so forth. So one of the rules that they develop, both based on this lumdus of a shuttav. And then in terms of shuttav, so they both have David Oppenheim writes in the Tshuva, and Diane Weiss says it also, you have to ask yourself, what would be a reasonable expense for a shuttav to take on? Because we're running a business together. We're in it together. So each of us travels independently for the business. So we give in our receipts. If I happen to be taking a flight to Japan, you're taking a flight to Indiana, so my flight's more expensive than yours is, but we're both doing it for the business, so I don't pay my own flight, you don't pay your own flight. Those receipts, we each get reimbursed from the business for our flights. So if those are reasonable business expenses, so that the shutfus would pay, so hu adinami, it's a reasonable business expense to deduct before cheshbening Maisa. Again, whether it's travel expenses or office expenses. Now, they quote in the AOJS Maaser Ksavim Sefer, a machlokas aruch hashulchan Shlomo Zalman, how about food on the road? Which happens to be they point out a difference, lahavdil, between taxation regulations in different countries. Food on the road. Right? So I'm traveling on business for 3 days. So I gotta eat. The pasha that the cost of travel, of the actual travel, those airline costs or car rental, train, that's clearly a business expense. But I also need to eat breakfast, lunch, and supper while I'm on the road. So yesh omrim, the Aruch HaShulchan says, that's a business expense. I traveled, he talks about, you traveled to the Yerid, you traveled to Leipzig, to the Yerid, so you gotta eat, you gotta buy food on the way. So that's all a business expense. Shlomo Zalman says, when is all business expense? If you wouldn't have gone on the business trip, you also would have eaten breakfast, lunch, and supper. If you wouldn't have gone on the business trip, you wouldn't have paid for your travel. You wouldn't have paid for an airline ticket or a wagon driver if you wouldn't have been traveling on business. But you would have eaten breakfast, except you would have eaten breakfast at home instead of eating breakfast on the road. So that's the dominant approach in Poskim, is how much of a difference. It could be that breakfast on the road is a whole lot more expensive than breakfast at home. At breakfast at home, you buy in bulk. You have a system. Breakfast on the road is going to be a lot more expensive. That difference may be deductible. And then also another angle is, let's say a fellow bought nicer clothing. I would have bought clothing anyways, but I need to dress to a certain standard if I'm working in a particular industry. If I'm in sales, if I want to be effective, I have to be presentable. Perhaps more presentable than I would be otherwise if I was working in tech. So I can't deduct my total clothing expense, but the difference between what I would otherwise have dressed and how I need to, how much more I need to, the margin of difference that's required, that delta that's required because of the business, so that delta I can deduct. That lechora is a gemara. It derives naturally from the svara of Shutav, and it's also perhaps a gemara of Bava Basra and elsewhere. But Yerusha, the Gemara talks about the which Yerusha is an example of a shutfus chalukas ha-Yerusha. In other words, a parent, let's say, passed away, leaves an estate. At some later point, the children decide, initially maybe they were maintaining it all together, running the business or running the assets together. And at some point, they say, you know what, let's separate. I want to do what I want to do with my chalik, you want to do what you want to do with your chalik, I want to invest in this, you want to invest in that. We'll do a chalukas ha-Yerusha. So Gemara says that you have to figure out expenses before. Up until now, we've been spending money. You have to account for that. So the Gemara does point out, look, let's say there were older children, younger children. The older children were running the business. Younger children weren't able to. The Gemara points out it may be legitimate that the older children had to spend a little more on clothing in order to look presentable to make sales. So that's a business that the Gemara points out. That's a legitimate business expense. So that's the overall thinking. There is a more difficult opinion of Matisio Treves, not a well-known, probably a late Rishon, quoted by the Knesset HaGadola here on the side. And there's a debate about whether the Girsa is correct or not. It's a difficult tshuva to read. But the Knesset HaGadol on the side quotes a long, long tshuva from Matisyo Treves, who seems to have been a French chacham, who at one point, like 15 lines down, says here, Mashiyarviach yoser al mashapizer bedvar matzrichin lebeso. You have to figure out how much have you profited above and beyond what you spent on your household expenses. And then, yikach ha-maser, you take maser from that. In other words, when Matzio of Treves says, not only do you deduct business expenses, you even deduct what you spend on food, clothing, shelter, etc. Now, you think about that for a moment, that's a massive difference. For most people, that will very dramatically reduce the amount of money, because for many, 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 many people, the bulk of what you're earning is going that people spend. Now, again, obviously he's not talking about I choose to live luxuriously. That's not what he's talking about. But basic, reasonable food, clothing, shelter for oneself, one's family, for many, many people, that's the vast majority of what you're earning. So, tuition, v'chule, 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 v'chule. So that would dramatically, dramatically reduce the amount of money left upon which one would give masa. So many posts are unhappy with this approach of Masiyot, and I'm sure that it's actually even accurate. The whole tshuva reads very funny. There are different versions quoting different places. There's a Girsa question in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, whether he does or doesn't have three words about, you know, first subtract household expenses. So the approach of post, my sense is in general that if a person is very, very tight and is unable, can't really see giving Ma'aser K'safim without Mitzvah of Trees, so then give Ma'aser K'safim lefi the sheet of Mitzvah of Trees. But if you are able to give Ma'aser K'safim without deducting all of your basic household expenses, that's really the standard way to do it, would be without the kula of Matisyo of Trees. Now there's another issue also of deducting, not only deducting expenses, another question is, can I also deduct losses? That's what how the Pesach Tshuva opens. Quotes the Tshuva Shar Ephraim, quoted by, in turn, by the Maharit. The source of the Shar Ephraim, let's say I have two different businesses. And one, I don't want to keep all my eggs in one basket, so I diversify my investments. I have one business over here, a different type of business over there. One is doing well, the other one isn't. So can I subtract, so I took a gain of 200 over here and a loss of 100 over there. So am I giving maaser on the 200? No, I took a loss of 100. No, I don't have to get maaser on my loss, but I have to give maaser the full 200 that I earned in business number one. Or I say, no, put it all together. 200 minus 100, I only had revach of 100. So that's also, here's where he introduces the other major issue in Cheshbin Ma'aser K'safim. In addition to what you deduct is a question of when. The question of when. How much time am I looking at? And in order to be able to say these two things are mitzaref, well, this, you know, I had this revach and this hefzid, so they all hang together. There needs to be some shir tzir. You know, when we talk about eating, the Torah kazayis b'toch k'dei chilas pras. K'dei chilas pras is the shir tzir. Sometimes, you know, that's a couple of minutes. When we talk about speech, so the Gemara is a shir tzir of toch k'dei dibur. Here, the Posim talk about a year. They say, if you're keeping cheshbon, if you have a pinkus, if you keep an accounting, you have a book, and they talk about this. It's beautiful. Pesach Tshuva Le'aron Kozen Nadi Yehuda talks about a Jew who had a book that he kept his entire life. He had a ledger for his for business and Ma'aser K'safim for a lifetime, Pinkas Miyuchad for a lifetime. And he passed away, and the children found the Pinkas, and his shaila was, the children realized that the Ma'aser owed the father. In other words, the father had overpaid Ma'aser, and then there were losses afterwards, or there wasn't sufficient revenue afterwards, and then he passed away. They want to know, could they yarshin his credit on Ma'aser K'safim? Interesting type of question. But it's a gorgeous description of a Jew who kept a Ma'aser K'safim pinkas for a lifetime. So that Nevi Yehuda says, and the Beis Lechem Yehuda on the side says as well, look, if you have a pinkas, so that you can keep accounts, and then you really want to keep account from year to year. Some posts talk about Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, some talk about Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat. Rabbi Shechter quotes Achron, we talk about Tu B'Shvat. And many say, you just pick whatever your year is, whatever works, which if you're in America, usually January 1st to December 31st will work well, because that's how you're paid and that's how your tax accounting is done. It's usually the simplest, most effective. How am I going to figure out how much I was paid before and after Rosh Hashanah? It's very difficult if checks don't come in on the Hebrew calendar. I say, if you have a pinkus, so then everything is in, if you keep accounts, so then everything could, all the losses could count as canceling out gains. You look at everything as one big holistic picture. If not, so then once you give the Ma'aser K'safim, it's in the pushka. Well, you can't take the money out of the pushka, right? Put it. You had a gain from one business. You took mice, you put in the pushka. Well, whether it's his pushka, or even I have an account, donor advised account, or some other sort of kiss shell mice itself. And once it's in the pushka, it's in the pushka. But if I'm keeping if I haven't yet put in the pushka, so I could still make a cheshbon. If I keep accounts, if I have a ledger, so then I'm keeping accounts of all of my gains, all of my losses, all of my expenses, and all of my donations to tzedakah. And everything totals at the end of the year, at the end of whatever my accounting period is. The Knesset Gedolah says half a year or a year. Most posts can talk about a year. One last issue in the world of my. There are more details. One last issue in the world of my Sukhsafim. Then let's very briefly wrap up the rest of the siman. One last issue in the world of my Sukhsafim is the question of double taxation. There's this concept that Pitzchei Tshuva, his long Pitzchei Tshuva discusses more than once, about ma'os me'usaros, gemeisered money. Oh, don't worry, that money was already. It already had Meiser taken off. In other words, it says that the Pesach Yeshuva has a discussion about parents are setting their children up. Children aren't yet financially self-sufficient. So the parents pledge in advance. Once upon a time, that was formalized in the Tanaim at the engagement. Parents pledge in advance. Each one's going to help out to a certain extent. So the question is, if the parents give the kids money, and they said, we already took off Meiser. That's one of the versions of the Shaila. We already took off Meiser, don't worry. It's already gemeisered. So, b'derech klal, that doesn't help. Unless I took off Meiser a second time right before giving it. But each time a person earns money, and it, once again, it's not exactly like Meiser ani. If I earn money, let's going back to the case where you had before. Right?
It's Yerushin. Why?
Oh, good. Let's say I earn money. As you said, the case you gave before, I'm a landlord. Right? So people are writing me rental checks. So I'll deduct whatever my expenses are, but whatever remains after expenses, I'm going to give Meister that money. Right? Then I'm going to take the money that I made, I'm going to go to the grocery. I'm going to buy something. Now the grocer just got money. So does he say, well, it's already good Meister because the landlord? No. I made the money, I give Meister. But now that dollar passes to you, and the shopkeeper, you made money, now you give my son, and so on and so forth. As a matter of fact, Pitzchei Tshuva quotes a Shlach, who says that when children receive Yerusha, they need to give Maser on the Yerusha, even though they know that their father was always careful to give Maser. So he earned the money with whatever his business or occupation was, and he gave Maser. That's wonderful. He earned the money, he gave Maser. Now you just earned the money, quote unquote, earned, not through work, but you received the three Yerusha, so now it's the Yerushim's turn to give Masa. So that notion of, that not exactly double taxation, but every time the dollar changes hands, someone new just earned it, so that someone now is expected to, kufiha minig, give Masa on that. So that's the main focus in C from Aleph and Aleph from Beis, and then, from Siv Gimel and on, we turn away from the question of how, the quantitative question of how much, to the qualitative question of how you give the tzedakah emotionally and practically. So over the course of Sifim Gimel and Dalid, we talk about the importance of how you give it. It has to be b'seir upon the office, b'simcha, b'tuv levav, with joy, with excitement to share this money with others, and with empathy. It has to be excitement to give, which is sometimes easy, sometimes difficult. I worked hard for this money. So I posted the Sarum talk. I have to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I understand that I'm a trustee, and not HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose for me to hold on to this money, to use it for all sorts of good things, one of which is tzedakah, as well as other good things. It's a very different mindset. The Chafetz Chaim, I think, has an Eitzah. He lived before modern donor-advised funds, but he has this Eitzah, I mentioned before, of the Kisshel Maser. He says, just just put the money aside immediately. When it comes off, when it's automatically deducted from the paycheck, Chafetz Chaim says, there's a value to putting it aside right away. Just stick it into a different account. He's not talking about bank accounts, he's talking about you have a box or a bag in your house, but put the money aside right away. You got your earnings, you got your salary, and you made your profits, you sit down right away, put the money aside, and then you just know it's not Baba Cheshbon. It's easier than if later in the month, I have to give tzedakah, don't want. He says, just put it aside in advance. You don't figure out right away to whom you're giving it. Fine, but already put it aside in a separate account, a separate bag, whatever technology you're using, and it can make it simpler. Automatic deduction automatic deduction to a particular tzedakah is a mixed bag because you don't have the opportunity of giving. You're not engaged in the act of giving. We mentioned last time the Rambam talks in Pirush HaMishnayos about the value of every act of giving. But you can still have ways where, let's say, you put it into a fund, but then you disperse it. It's something to think about. But that's very important. The tenor, the emotional tenor with which I give tzedakah. The Rambam Shulchan Aruch says, in the worst case scenario, I lost the mitzvah. If I make the ani feel horrible, if he sees I don't want to give, then I'm angry with him, and I just lost this, I gave him money, and I lost this cost of giving money. It's a frightening thought. It goes on to say, Sivdalad, it's sometimes easier and sometimes harder. We've always been a sign of Sivdalad, not to yell and scream, not to be unpleasant with the ani. It says, even if I don't have what to give, I have to at least show him that I wish I could. The money I may or may not have, but the ability to smile, it's never too expensive to smile. The Rama adds an important nakuda that even if I only have a small amount, al yashuv dach nichlam, based on the pasuk in Mishlei, I can't embarrass the fellow collecting by turning him away with nothing. That comes up in a number of contexts. Now, even if I only have change in my pocket right now, but you give something, give him a sandwich, give something. It also comes up later on, we'll talk about, we may or may not see this, but Post can talk about to what extent, someone's going around collecting from door to door, you give less, but still something. That comes up in Siman Reish Nun. And sometimes we wouldn't give a significant amount, depending on the need. For certain needs, we wouldn't give a significant amount unless we have verified that there's real need. And that's why a number of communities have a system in place, a VOD, that fellow wants to collect in the neighborhood, he'll go to the local VOD and present his credentials, and they'll research it, and they'll give him a tudah that we looked into his credentials. It appears to be legitimate. It seems to actually be a real need that he's not a fake. But even if a fellow doesn't have a tuda, you're not going to give him a significant need. You got to give him a quarter. You can't say no tuda, I won't give anything. You wouldn't give him $5, $10 or more. Maybe you'll give him a dollar, maybe not even a dollar, but a quarter. That's a Ramah and Sif Dalit. That's sort of on the edge, the very extreme of this sensitivity to the person. And also nafka mina later on. Nafka mina in this larger picture. Again, here you see from Gimel and Dalit, you're seeing two sides of the coin. When you give, make sure that you're not only giving funds, but you're giving besimcha and you're giving with care, concern, my own personal simcha and giving, and care, concern, and empathy for the fellow to whom I'm giving. And when I can't give, I have to make sure to, nevertheless, to empathize. It comes up on the other end also, because the next number of Se'ifim, from Vav to Yud Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch, Tur and Shulchan Aruch, quote the Rambam's Shmona Malas B'Tzedakah, near the end of the Perek Yud of Matnas Anin. The Rambam has the 8 levels, from top to bottom, from best to worst, different scenarios of giving tzedakah. So if you work it backwards, you look at the difference between the two bottom levels, in a sense that's the most critical. Because the worst is when you're missing what? Level 8 is level 8 because it's missing what even level 7 has. What does level 7 have, level 8 doesn't have? Sefer Panim Yafos versus Atzif. So you see, in a certain sense, that's the most basic issue. If you don't have the Sefer Panim Yafos, then you're down to level 8. Then you're down to level 8. If it's being done, the Shach points out, that means, it doesn't mean, level 8 doesn't mean that I'm angry, I'm nasty. That's what we just said, Panim Zufos, you're not even level 8, you're 0. That's the Gimel. But it means I'm not nasty, but I'm unhappy that I'm giving. It's Bitsara sign. I'm giving, I feel very miserly, I'm giving despite it. But to give besimcha, that's one of the most basic aspects. The most basic aspect is the external nesina besimcha, without panim zu'ufos, and then the internal, as that Shachri just quoted, to give besimcha. And he worked way up the mile, you can see there's one other aspect of nesina besimcha, not only that I'm not frowning about it, and I'm not frowning inside, but that the next expression of that is to be proactive, to give beforehand an expression of simcha. Then as you work way up through the rest of the milos, it talks about beyond the most critical value of nesina besimcha and all of its externally, internally, and with proactivity, even better would be to give it besesa, to give it, to anonymize. And within anonymization, you see from the list, the Rambam Shulchan Aruch have, that best is if neither knows. It's all based on Gemara's and Subas and Baba Bas. So best is if neither party knows the identity of the other, but the recipient not knowing who's giving to him is more critical than the donor not knowing to whom he's giving. Shulchan Aruch tells that they quote Gemara's up right there. Gemara's tells about Amaram who did both versions. There were Amaram who would leave the money in a bag loosely hanging behind them so that Aniyim could take. But the Ani saw that the donor doesn't know who he is. So that reduces the Ani's busha somewhat. Better is if the Ani really doesn't know who gave them. Where the Gemara talks about the Tzadikim would leave the money al pisrei ha'aniyim. Which Shulchan Aruch points out is a good solution to drop off envelopes anonymously is a good solution if you don't have the better solution, the mila above, which is neither knows who the other one is. For that, you need to have some sort of organization, either a gabbai tzedakah or a tzedakah organization. You give money to a Tom Fei Shabbos, there's some such reliable tzedakah organization, a reliable gabbai tzedakah, whether it's through Rav Vashulam as a rabbinic discretionary account that's well handled, that's essentially a mutual fund for tzedakah, that's diversified in different tzedakah needs. Or what they call a kupa shel tzedakah. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. Kupa shel tzedakah. You have to have a mamuna who's neman v'yodeya linu b'kushu. You have to have a mamuna. Some posts can talk about a Talmud Chacham. And certainly someone who is honest and competent. Dishonest is nothing to talk about. Or he's honest but not competent. Not competent either to handle money well or to make sure to give to people who need and to allocate the money appropriately. But if you have someone who's neman and Yodei Lingbo Kashurah, that is the most ideal way to give donations. You're avoiding the whole issue of him feeling uncomfortable, of him seeing you are happy, you're not happy, you're not directly interacting, it's actually more ideal. And the only better one, of course, is Rambam understands that the higher level of stock is the Hechazaktaba, based on the Pasuk. If I could avoid him becoming an Ani in the first place, catch him before he falls, which often will be offering him a job or offering him a loan. Sometimes it will be a direct donation, but often will enabling him to resume employment or to be employable. That is the highest level, even better than giving donations. That really wraps up most of the issues. This has been Reish Bim Tess. I both say thank you so much. Let's sit down to the base. I'm glad to take more questions.